Hey folks, thanks for joining us for another edition of Jedi and Germs. This week, we roll it out without our illustrious producer, Devin Masters. So John and I tackle it. It's a little bit raw, uncut. There's some technical difficulties along the way. You probably will realize them as we go, but bear with us. Enjoy this episode. We'll hope to be back to our normal format very soon. Thank you for joining us. And without further ado, here's Jedi and Germs. You're listening to Jedi and Germs. It's a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. We're without our producer, Devin, tonight, torn by Devin, because he's a bit under the weather, as I am still myself. And so we're doing this as a Google Hangouts, and hopefully we can work out the recording portion of it as we go along. John, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good despite the game today.
Yeah, well, not just the game today. We've got two.
Despite all week.
Yeah, I was going to say, three in a row now that have not turned out in our favor very well?
Four.
Well, four in a row. Thank you. Thank you for that subtle reminder. Four in a row.
Yeah, Jazz have lost four in a row, five of their last six. Things aren't going the way we thought. I mean, the Jazz were 26-25 after we got this overtime win against the Mavericks we all felt good about. Now the Jazz are 28-32, and the only reason, I mean, at this point, you know, a couple weeks ago, we were thinking maybe the Jazz can get up to the fifth seed. Now it looks like the only option is eighth seed or miss the playoffs. Things are not going their way right now.
No, they're not. You know, I suppose we could analyze and break down what's gone wrong, and I'm sure you've got some thoughts on that. I don't know where to begin with this, John, because they have struggled a bit, and it's been a very scary trend late in games, really. All four of those games, Brooklyn was more than just the fourth quarter, but three of those four have all kind of fallen apart late in the game. Am I right?
Yeah, Jazz were down six, 2 minutes to go today. And, you know, all these games have been close. They lost by five to the Celtics before that. They lost by two to the Nets before that.
And although they lost by 18 at home to the Spurs, they really had a fairly closely contested game until probably midway through the fourth quarter, where San Antonio just put their will on the Jazz and took over and put the pedal to the floor and took off.
This just makes me miss Alec Burks tremendously. I mean, the Jazz had this rotation that was working for them. You were going to have Alec, Rodney, and Gordon as your three backcourt guys, and that was going to be our closing. And the lack of Alec Burks, the lack of Dante Exum, and really to the Toronto game, I think we would have won the Toronto game if Hood didn't go down. But it just exposes our lack of depth again.
Yeah, well, and you can also point to the fact that Rudy got in early foul trouble and really could never recover and really could never give the Jazz the defensive presence that he is in the middle like we're used to. I mean, he had four fouls by the end of the third quarter. Was it four or five? Four. And had to play the fourth quarter, I think, a little bit tentatively without picking up those final two fouls.
Yeah, that's fair. But even then, once you're down to 3 minutes and the game's just right there, I mean, when it was 2:01 and Rudy got fouled and the Jazz were down six, and I wrote, okay, we need Rudy to make at least one of these so we can get that last 2 minutes report. He missed both free throws, and Toronto runs down. They go back again. They miss their shot. Toronto runs down again. And, you know, the game was over at that point. And, Rudy needs to make those free throws. If he makes those free throws, maybe the Jazz still have a chance to win it. It's you know, we got to remember that Toronto's a good team. Toronto is now 41-19. They are easily the second best team in the East,
and a top five team in the NBA.
Top five team in the NBA. They have a legitimate chance of catching Cleveland. Do not be surprised if the Raptors are the number one seed at the end of the season.
There you go.
So,
No,
you know,
and
I
as
can't be
was
too upset.
no, and as was made apparent tonight, I mean, it on if anybody watched the broadcast, and I'm sure Locke had plenty to say on the radio too. I mean, the Raptors are the fifth best defensive team in the NBA. Fifth best. I mean, the Jazz are ahead of them defensively. The Jazz are what, the second or third best team defensively in the NBA. So you had two very good defensive teams, but you had one team that is, I think, a little more mature on the offensive end of the floor, a little bit more patient and could find ways to score. And then the other team who I still don't think has found a true offensive identity yet. And I'm going to say that. I mean, I sure we're 50 games into the season, more than 50 games. I just don't think the Jazz have found their offensive identity. And part of that's injury. And part of that is I think we still have guys that are still learning where their offense is on the floor and where their spots are. I mean, look at how long it's taken Rodney to get there. So we have guys that just aren't there yet offensively.
Well, when you say they're fifth best defensively, are you going from a certain date? Because for the season, they are 12th and the Jazz are 14th.
Well, and I don't know when they're going with. I'm just going by what I heard.
They're fifth best offensively.
Is it fifth best offensively? Was I looking at that wrong? I was
Maybe.
looking, I was listening to the broadcast and something was being mentioned about it. I mean, Toronto's good defensively, and we saw that tonight. They clamped down on the Jazz in the fourth quarter on the defensive side of the ball and made it very difficult. And, you know, they've got guys that are scrappy defenders. You know, Lowry's a good defender. Scola's a good defender. I thought Johnson played very well defensively on against Hayward tonight. They've got guys, you know, I don't know how good DeRozan really is, but they've got guys that they can hide DeRozan's defense a little bit because they've got guys that can play really well on the defensive end.
Yeah, Gordon was going right at DeRozan early, and you know, I was glad for that. And Gordon was, I think he was 9 of the first 13 Jazz points.
Yeah.
But Toronto figured that out pretty quickly.
Didn't they switch and put Johnson on him for a good part of the second half?
They switched, but I'm going to go back to Rodney Hood because Rodney Hood was +5, and then he went down, and it was 38-26 at that point. And Rodney goes down. Toronto instantly goes on a 6-0 run, and the game just wasn't the same after that. Jazz were down 3 at the half, down 11 after 3, if I remember right.
Right.
You
And
know,
they cut it. They cut
this
it all
is.
the way back. They cut it all the way back down to 94-90 with about, I believe it was 4.5 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah, they managed to claw their way back, and it still just wasn't quite enough. And a lot of these losses have been that. A lot of these losses have come down to the wire, and it just hasn't been quite enough. I mean, they look like they lost by 10, but they were right there in the fourth quarter, and then it just ran away from them right at the end.
All right, so I'm gonna do this for a second. I know you probably had we had some kind of pre, you know, set topics and whatnot, but I want to talk about a couple of things that I think fit well into this conversation. You know, first of all, everybody knows that listens. I'm not the stat geek here, and I've already proved that tonight myself because I've been wrong on this on the ratings. But I don't want to talk stats for a moment. Instead, you know, we're talking about playoffs. We're talking about the makeup of the Jazz, where they're at right now. Yesterday, Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops did a question and answer on Reddit, and I read through it. One of the guys asked a question about the Jazz's playoff ventures and where they're going to be, and he pointed to an article a couple of weeks back, a question and answer that Rodney did with Slam Magazine. Did
Oh,
you read that?
no, I didn't.
It was very interesting. I read through it, parts of it, but I read a particular comment or a particular answer that Andy pointed to about Rodney. I wonder if this really describes where the Jazz team is at right now, and maybe fans' expectations are higher than what Jazz organization, including players and coaching, is at right now. Fans expect playoffs already. Rodney Hood, in an answer, said it isn't playoff or bust for the Jazz right now. We're not in playoff or bust mode. In fact, if we make the playoffs, it's an added bonus or maybe a step further forward than we planned. We're just wanting to get better. What do you think?
I think that's totally fair since they didn't change their team and everyone is so young. We all thought because of the way they played at the end of last year that this was going to be a playoff year. And if Dante doesn't go down, it is. Still think they're good enough to make the playoffs. And then Alec Burks goes down. And you had Gobert and Favors miss all this time. You know, they're still a winning team when you have Favors and Gobert. I haven't done the math lately, but they're 11-18 when Favors and Gobert don't play. So they're 28-32 now, so that's, what, 14, 15 and 14?
Yeah, sounds right.
Something like that. So, no, I did that wrong, but I'm not going to go back and do it. So, yeah, the Jazz are better than they were. They're a winning team when they have everybody. But, you know, now they got to look at where they are now. And where they are now is the best I think they can hope for is the 8th seed. If they get the 8th seed, they probably get swept by the Warriors. They probably get destroyed by the Warriors. Maybe they get one game. Maybe they get that playoff experience. I don't know how valuable that playoff experience would be when you're getting swept. But who knows? They'll have Alec Burks back. They will be a better team with Alec Burks in the lineup. I would still hope they would make the playoffs because usually there's not that much a difference between the 14th pick and the 16th pick. And yet the way the West and the East look, if they get the 8th seed, I think they get the 15th pick probably with the way the East is shaping up.
Probably.
And the way Houston is helpfully losing a lot of games too.
Well, here's –
let me just say this. The 9th seed in the East is a 500 team, and the Jazz are the 9th seed, and they are four games below. So you can make the playoffs and get the 15th seed, or you can miss the playoffs and get the 14th seed, or the 13th seed, or the 12th seed. Whatever it is, how much difference is there really? Okay.
Let me read the quote exact, because I think this tells a lot about, again, what the goals and plans of the players and coaching staff is in perspective of what the fans' expectations, myself included, of the Jazz. This is the question. So Slam says, is the team's primary goal to make the playoffs? Rodney Hood's response is, to be honest, not really. We just want to do well as a team and to keep improving. We want to be a playoff team this season, yes, but I don't look at it as playoffs or bust because we're still the second youngest team in the league. But at the same time, that would propel our rebuilding process even further, even faster heading into next season and for seasons to come. For me personally, I just want to play well, help this team as much as I can, and to continue to score the ball, play defense. Whatever I can do to help this team to get where we need to be, that's what I'm about and what I want to do. I'm going back to the first part of the statement, really. To be honest, not really. We just want to do well as a team and to keep improving. We as fans have this expectation because, well, we've been used to the team winning for so long, and that's been the priority, that we expect that that's the priority right now. Well, I think winning is the priority, but I think there's a deeper priority right now in the Jazz organization, specifically with the coaching staff and the players, than anything we fans may still yet understand. And that is development and getting better. If they make the playoffs, it's a bonus. They probably, I mean, I still think they will. I think you still think they will. But whether they do or not is not a significant hit to them in either facet, because they're just trying to develop a squad into a winning organization.
Yeah, I still think they make the playoffs, and they probably do it with a 41-41 record, maybe even 40-42. If you go to January 1st, I look at their net rating, and they are still the 11th team in the NBA. Let's see, that would make them 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th in the West since January 1st. Yeah, I still think they'll get there.
So do I.
I think Houston, even though I saw that they're signing Michael Beasley and they waived Ty Lawson, I still think Houston has enough problems that once Jazz get past this rough stretch on the road, I think they can still be better than Houston to get to that 8th seed.
I'm gonna laugh because you know you're in trouble when you let one problem child go and sign another potential problem child. Just saying.
I know. The reason I still think the Jazz are going to make the playoffs is I go back to where they're going to be at the end of the season. They'll have Alec Burks back, and the last 6 of 9 are at home. And I look at their final games, and even then, their last 4 road games are against Minnesota, Phoenix, Denver, and the Lakers. I think that's where they're going to get one game better than Houston and make it to the playoffs. I will still say that. But do I think they're going to get up to the 5th seed? Absolutely not. I
No.
would be shocked if they get to the 7th seed. But 8th seed's very much in play.
Well, and I think it's funny because I think there's a cliche that I think Jazz fans don't want to hear right now, and that is the Jazz are young. But I think what we've seen on the court over the last 3 weeks is a testament to the fact that they're young. Because they go in, they beat Houston. They go in on the road and they beat the Mavericks. And both in situations where they had to play well in the fourth quarter and close out the game, and they did it. And then they turn around and they play the last 4 games. 3 of them had opportunities to close out in the fourth quarter and just couldn't close out. Are they inconsistent? Yeah. Why? Because they're young. And young teams still have to learn how to consistently close out fourth quarters. The Jazz have how many games this year? John, I mean, you and I could go through the games this year and probably count on two handfuls or more how many close games the Jazz have let slip. And I think it goes back to the cliche that Jazz fans don't want to hear, but it's a fact. They're young and they're not there yet.
Yeah, that's the next step of their learning. That overtime win against Houston, great learning experience. They've had a lot of overtimes. So that overtime win against Dallas. They had an overtime win against Chicago. If I remember right, this is like they lead the league in overtime games.
Yeah, and they've lost quite a few as well. I think one of them was against Houston where they lost. Another, I'm trying to remember. There's a couple of them that have gone in overtime and
I
they've
pulled it
lost.
up. I'll go through their overtime games. Of their overtime games, win against the Pacers, loss to the Thunder, win to the Grizzlies, loss to the Hornets, loss to the Knicks, win against the Bulls, win against the Mavericks, win against the Rockets.
That's 500. That's 4-4.
Well, there you go. They're doing pretty good.
Yeah. It goes to show that I still think they're young, and 4-4 is good, but it's not where you. I mean, when you have those games, and you go back and how many of those games were on their home court, you've got to be able to close out those games at home and win them.
Yeah. Does my audio still sound okay? Okay, good. You sound rough to me, and hopefully it's just what I'm listening and not what's actually recording.
Day. If it is, then people are being treated to a rough voice.
Yeah.
Next on topics, what do you want to talk about?
Let's see. We talked about playoffs. Do we want to go over their upcoming schedule?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. They. Oh, let's see. By the time we record, there will be a home game against Atlanta. If you're not going to that game, then we can record as soon as it's over. But they have 2 more road games. They have a road game against the Grizzlies and against the Pelicans. The Grizzlies, shockingly enough, even with those trades they made, have been playing pretty good. Maybe that's their schedule. And the Pelicans are still the Pelicans, which used to mean something, except the Jazz lost to the Pelicans last time they played.
Yep.
Granted, it was a close game.
But it was another fourth quarter collapse, too, by the way.
Yeah, it was a fourth quarter collapse. Despite the fact the Jazz have lost four in a row, I think they split those games.
I agree.
I have no idea which one they win, but I think they split those games.
I would have to, if I were a betting man right now, I would have to think that they will win a game in Memphis and they'll lose to the Pelicans. Just because it's opposite of what they really should do. They should lose to Memphis and they should beat the Pelicans. But I think it's going to be a role reversal here. I think the Jazz are going to lose the one that they probably should win, and they're going to win the one that nobody expects them to.
Yeah, and then the Jazz will be 29-33, and you know, they'll be playing Atlanta at home. Atlanta's pretty good. If they can somehow pull that off, then they'll be 30-33. And you know, it's gonna be a while. It might be a while before they get back to 500.
Yeah.
Because after that, they're playing the Warriors on the road. They still have a 5-game road stretch toward the middle of March that they got to go through. So it is. I mean, March. Back in November, when we looked at the schedule, we saw March was going to be tough, and we're just beginning to get there. So,
and I'd like to think that we're hitting a stage in the NBA where some of the top teams are going to start resting players, but I just don't see that right now, because if you really look at it, the Warriors and the Spurs are still fairly close to each other, and it could be a battle down the stretch. I don't see the Warriors. Plus, the Warriors are after the record. I don't see them setting guys down. The Spurs will continue to rest guys, but beyond that, it's a dogfight on either east or west, top or bottom, and I just don't see guys resting. I think this might, despite some people's belief, I think that March and April might be some of the most exciting basketball we've seen in the NBA in the last few years.
Yeah, I haven't seen – San Antonio has rested maybe one or two games, but any rest they have done has been due to injury. They're 4 games behind Golden State, but they're 9 games ahead of Oklahoma City. So in April, you're going to see some rest with San Antonio.
Unless they have a chance to overtake Golden State, but I don't see that happening. But if they had any sort of inclination.
That's exactly it. I mean, they're going to get to April. If they're still 4 games behind, then they're just going to.
Exactly.
They'll go ahead and rest. They'll go ahead and take that second seed. Golden State, I don't see them. I see them trying to get the record. I see them trying to beat the Bulls and being that first 73-9 team.
Agreed. No, I agree with that completely. So the Jazz, their schedule's not going to be one of those easy glide to the finish schedules. They're going to have to battle to that very last night. I could see this going like it did. How many years ago was it where it was that final game of the season against Phoenix and win or lose decided whether you go to the playoffs or not? And Boozer sat out that night because of injury and the Jazz lost their playoffs hopes. You remember that year?
Yeah, I do.
So I could see this year going down the stretch very much like that. That last game could decide who goes to the playoffs and who doesn't.
Well, They're playing the Lakers. Jazz's last game is against the Lakers, and
right.
If they lose that, then they deserve to miss the playoffs. Lakers are 12-50.
I will not disagree with that, and I don't see the Jazz losing that game. I'm just saying that the race will be that tight that game might just very well be the deciding factor.
Yeah. Sorry, my wife just tried to talk to me.
That's
okay,
right.
Where are we wearing next?
Well, let's jump into NBA notes for a minute. Do you have any NBA notes of note to talk about?
I think I just looked at an old one. What's the Okay, there it is. We're seeing more buyouts, and the one I found interesting was the Spurs waived Ray McCallum so they could sign Andre Miller.
I saw that as well.
I don't know why they would do that other than to be cool to Andre Miller. But, you know.
Was it a downgrade or not really?
not really. It's kind of a sideways move, really, because he can't really do that much now. I think it's more like the Spurs are being cool with him, like they were with Glenn Robinson a few years ago, where they're like, hey, do you want a ring? Come sit on our bench.
That might be it. Hey, why not? I mean, Andre Miller, the storied veteran, this might be his last hurrah to play in the NBA, because I think after this year, it might not be much of a game for him anymore. So maybe not. Let him ride along, go along for the ride, see what happens.
I'm trying to think if there were any recent ones. I saw that Kevin Martin's going to get bought out by the T-Wolves.
Yeah. I wonder if his days in the NBA are done, really.
No, he'll find another team. It's
You
just, I
think?
mean, yeah, he's a really good scorer. He's a liability on defense, so teams will be mindful of that when they sign him. But yeah, he's got he'll land somewhere.
You see it, and yeah, a lot of these buyouts have been very interesting to me. I don't know. What's the one with Cleveland? I thought Cleveland was going to pick up somebody that was going to be on a buyout, or were they? Or am I just pulling straws?
Well, they waived Varejao.
Yes, but I could be just pulling straws because I've seen all these other
No,
moves.
yeah, I'm sure they. I can't remember.
I can't either. It's kicking my it. I confused the Joe Johnson thing earlier today too, but we know he ended up signing with Miami. So,
I was just trying to find the transactions tab, but I couldn't remember where the NBA put it. Let's see. I don't see the Cavs doing anything.
probably not. Well, I know Kyrie Irving's been a bit of a concern there lately, especially with his attitude. I've heard that kind of being grumbled about a little bit. Whether that means anything, I don't know.
I saw that story. I don't know how much credence I want to give it. If the Cavs don't win the NBA title, then maybe they rethink Tyronn Lue as their coach. Maybe they try to see if they do want to ship Kyrie or Kevin Love somewhere. You get the feeling that unless they win the title, one of those two guys is gone, which is just
Right.
so weird. Okay, the news was that Cavs were signing Jordan McRae to a 10-day contract. That's the
Okay.
only thing I got on here. That's not a story.
And speaking of 10-day contracts, the New York Knicks have chosen not to re-up Jimmer.
Yeah, that's a bizarre one as well. The Knicks have just been in this free fall, and the crowd clearly liked Jimmer and wanted to see Jimmer. And Rambus, as soon as they sign him, Rambus talks crap about him. Whenever he's let in the game, it's only for garbage and it's only for a minute or two, and he scores right away, and then the game's over. And that's it. He
And
played
I
two
realize it's.
games, 4 minutes total, 7 points. He walks away with a PER of 47.4. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I realize it's a small sample size, but to go with that PER, from what I understand, he had the highest true shooting percentage of anybody who's ever played in a Knicks uniform.
Well, he was one for one.
Yeah. Right?
So yeah, if you're 100%, then
Yeah, if you're keeping track, for those keeping track 100%, I don't know. I feel bad for Jimmer. Am I surprised at this? I don't know that I am. But yeah, I don't know.
well, here's the thing. Knicks have lost 15 of the last 18. They're not making the playoffs. Their season has completely imploded. And when
So
I
you think
say that, they were 22 and 22 when they beat the Jazz in overtime. They have since lost 15 of their last 18. They're completely out of it. And if you can get some fans excited for a Jimmer sighting, why would you not do that?
Yeah.
That's all I can say about that. I mean, the Knicks don't even get their first round pick this year.
Right.
Their season's just toast. So I don't get why, you know, I just don't understand. Rambus knows he is only there until April. He is a bench warmer. And, you know, I don't know what Phil's doing. I don't know what Rambus is doing. This season's lost. They don't have a pick. You know, all they can be thinking about now is free agent acquisitions and trades in the summer. But I don't understand. I mean, I understand that Jimmer has failed at the other teams he's gone to. Sacramento has always been a circus, so I'm not surprised he didn't succeed there. The Pelicans never quite caught on. Monty wound up giving him a lot of DMPs. And strangely enough, a lot of people criticize Monty Williams' coaching, but maybe he wasn't that bad a coach since you see what Alvin Gentry's done with the team. The Spurs gave Jimmer a chance in training camp, but he just didn't quite make the cut. They liked Ray McCallum more. And now the Knicks get him. And, you know, maybe despite all the good things he does in D-League, he goes to Knicks practice and he just doesn't impress anyone. Maybe it's something like that. He can go back to the D-League and be a stud, or he can go to Europe and make more money over there. But Jimmer, I'm really 50-50 with him. It wouldn't surprise me if that was his last shot at the NBA. It also wouldn't surprise me if he gets another chance with a team. So,
yeah, I won't disagree with that either. No, I mean, I don't know. I've heard folks suggest that maybe he should have gone overseas. I don't know if his window or time frame is closing on that. Maybe after the end of this season, he realizes that his NBA stay is over, and maybe he does go overseas. He can make money, and I think in the overseas market, it's a great place to go to make money and be successful on the court. And I think Jimmer, that might be a good spot for him. I don't know.
Well, he's 27, and so, you know, he's got to be thinking, if this NBA thing isn't going to work, then maybe I should make my money overseas. There have been plenty of guys that just didn't quite work in the NBA that had very successful overseas careers, and that's probably his destiny, really.
Yeah. I'm trying to think on any other notes. I don't know how much discussion time we have tonight, but I was going to one of the things I wanted to bring up, I wanted your thoughts. I know this has been talked about recently, and I don't think this can be overly talked about right now. I think this is good discussion, is where does Steph Curry fit on the all-time player, on the all-time great players list? You know, you had Jordan, arguably the best ever, and that's still a debatable topic for some folks, especially the old-timers. You have LeBron and Kobe that fit very near the top over what they've done over the last decade and a half, 2 decades. Where does Steph Curry currently reside on that list? And can he be in consideration for one of the greatest ever?
Well, there's two ways to do that. There's by position or just ever. If you're doing just ever, you know, maybe by the end of his career, he'll be in the top 10. He is having a transcendent year. He's just an amazing, amazing, amazing shooter right now. He only has one ring so far. I think that matters.
Yes, I agree.
But yeah, by the end of it, you know, as long as his health stays up, sure, then he probably is one of the top 10 players of all time, if his health holds up and if this keeps going.
See, with him too, what kills me is I've always liked Steph Curry. I've always enjoyed watching him. If there is one Achilles heel I gave him, or one issue I had with him early on, was whether his health would hold. You know, he always had problems with his ankles. But over the last 2 years, we've seen a guy figure out the longevity problem, I think. I mean, the other night he had an ankle injury. We thought, oh no, what's going to happen? He turns around and hits a game winner, and he's incredible. If he's figured out that longevity problem, then I think Steph Curry might be in that near nigh untouchable phrase for the NBA right now. Just nobody at that level. Nobody can get to that level right now.
Yeah, I think, well, he's the clear MVP this year, and you'll have two MVPs in a row. And that definitely matters if you're having all-time discussion. Warriors look like they're just going to waltz into another ring this year. Now you're talking dynasty. They really look like he can get three in a row, and so few teams have gotten three in a row. You know, you think of Bill Russell's Celtics, Michael Jordan's Bulls. Has any other team done three in a row? I don't think and the Lakers. If I remember right,
yeah, I was going to say, I thought the Lakers did
three in a row.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
So,
in fact, they got three in a row, and then they went. Kobe went again and won two in a row later.
Yeah, when you look at two in a rows, you're thinking of Elijah Wan's Rockets and Larry Bird's Celtics, and there's a lot more examples. Right. Three in a row, though, if I remember right, has only happened with three teams. And Bill Russell's Celtics, I think they won six or seven in a row somewhere in there.
Oh my gosh. They were tops in the world for a while.
Yeah. So you're talking three in a row teams. You're talking Kobe and Shaq's Lakers, Bill Russell's Celtics, Michael Jordan's Bulls. And those are all teams where you're talking all-time players.
Right.
So, Warriors look like they're going to get their second this year. There's no reason to think that they won't just be this amazing team for several more years, because their top three are all young. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. And
the only thing is I still have to believe, even with the raising salary cap, I still have to believe that they're not going to be able to pay to keep everybody for, you know, in the next, probably within 2 to 3 years, they're going to have to let some folks go because they just can't pay everybody ungodly amounts of money to keep them all together.
Very true. But if the worst case scenario happens and they clear out a bunch of guys to sign Kevin Durant, which I've seen discussed, then, you know, Warriors could be looking at this 4 or 5 year dominance.
Yeah.
That would just make the league unfun to watch.
I would agree, which is, I don't know. I have to wonder. You have to wonder at one point, either there's got to be a challenger or, and I don't know how much the NBA league office can jump into play and say, guys, we can't let this continue like this. There has to be competitive balance. But come on, guys, there has to be competitive balance. Otherwise, the NBA is in trouble. I really believe that.
I don't believe that, because the NBA was never more popular than it was with Michael Jordan's Bulls. Michael Jordan's Bulls just seemed unstoppable, and the NBA was better, never better. The highest rated NBA finals ever, unless it's been broken recently and I don't remember,
was the Jazz and the Bulls.
And as soon as Michael retired, took a long time for the NBA to recover.
But I could think that a lot of that had as much to do with the Jazz in the finals versus the Bulls as it was just Michael as well, because I mean it was kind of the darlings in the NBA is where the Jazz fit. They were a team that everybody wanted to watch, kind of the underdog a little bit, but two fairly evenly matched teams with aging players that were kind of going out in their twilight. So I mean, something could be said about the Jazz in those finals being the reason they were up as well.
Yeah, you had Stockton with the all-time assists and steals. You had Malone, who's a two-time MVP, and the storyline was great. You had that on one side and another on Michael. It's like, you know, during the playoffs, all the stories came out that they were going to blow up the Bulls team no matter what happened. So either this was going to be the last iteration of this Bulls. So are they going to go out with Michael Jordan going out on a swan song? Or are they going to lose in the last second and Carl and John's dream finally comes true. Yeah, I mean, it was a great storyline back then.
Oh, and by the way, it was the most closely contested finals, I think, in recent memory, too, because I think it was, I mean, it went six games, but I think overall it was within a 2 or 3 points total difference between the two teams. So, anyway.
I can't think out the top of my head, but I'm sure we've had closer ones recently.
We probably have. It was just something that came across my mind back then. I know it was a topic of discussion. So anyway, the Steph Curry thing, the Golden State Warriors thing was definitely of worthy note. And that's why I thought I'd bring it into the discussion because it's talked about. It's going to be talked about and they're the hottest ticket in the NBA. They might as well be talked about. Beyond that, can't think of anything else NBA noteworthy to really bring up. Any other sports tickers or notes?
I only really care about football and basketball, so no.
Nope. Spring ball starting for college locally, but not much to talk about there. So yeah, I'm the same way as you. Those are the only two that really kind of interest or pique my interest much. So yeah. Anything movie wise, you seen anything since our last talk?
Well, the Oscars happened.
Yes, they did.
Did you happen to watch it?
I did. I watched it all. I thought Chris Rock gave one of the best performances as a host that I've ever watched.
Yeah, I thought Chris Rock was great. I thought Chris had a tough job, and he handled it just right.
Brilliantly.
I loved his no-holds-barred opening monologue that seemed to skewer everybody.
Yes.
It had and see, they made it a recurring theme the whole night, and so some of my favorite skits came from that, like when they put black actors in white movies and you had Leslie Jones as the bear in The Revenant. I thought was hilarious.
That was great.
Tracy Morgan as the Danish girl was hilarious. I loved it when they had Angela Bassett honoring Black History Month and they do this montage where you think they're talking about Will Smith and at the very end they're like, we honor Jack Black. Those I thought all those were fun. At the same time, there seemed to be this uncomfortable pall over the whole ceremony because the Academy realized it was the second year in a row that all of their acting nominees were white. And, you know, that led to a discussion on what do we really want to do? Do we want to do affirmative action acting nominations? And also it kind of got lost that it wasn't just that there weren't any. It's not that they were all white. It's that there weren't any black actors because Hispanics and Asians kind of got left out of the conversation. But when you looked at the actual winners coming up, I was glad to see that, you know what, there was a lot of diversity in the winners. And some of the best moments of the Oscars are some of the ones that are the most ignored. The best documentary short was by this Pakistani woman who made a documentary about honor killings in Pakistan. And she got up there and, you know, right as the orchestra tried to play her off, she pointed out the Pakistani government changed their laws on honor killings because they were inspired by her films. And that to me is what Hollywood's all about and what the Academy Awards are all about is bringing recognition to stuff like that. It warmed my heart that best animated short went to this thing called Bear Story that nobody's seen, but the two guys accepting the award were able to say this is the first Academy Award ever given to the country of Chile. You know, that's the stuff I love about the Academy Awards.
You know, and there are a couple of things that I make note of in this situation. First of all, I go with you on that. I think they're great feel-good stories. The one thing I do enjoy, and you made note of it with I forget her name already, where the Academy started playing the music to get her off the stage and she continued. There were two or three times it happened that night where the particular individual giving their gratitude forced the music to stop. And I love how the Academy has their built-in ideas of this is how we want it to go and we need it to go without a hitch. And then you have a few of these people that just need to take a moment and make it known to the world about some important things. And it forces forces the music to stop and forces everybody to stop for a minute. And I enjoy it. I like when something that happens in an award ceremony like that, because I think it's important people get a chance to hear some of this stuff. It was perfect. That aside, I was going to go back to your comment about the lack of black and whatnot as far as the nominations go. I was talking with somebody recently, and I don't know, maybe you had mentioned it too, but I almost feel like it's not as much the Academy's fault as it is Hollywood's fault for not putting maybe these races, black and whatnot, in a situation where they can succeed at that point. Is it as much their fault as it is the Academy's?
Oh, it is. I mean, I don't blame the Academy that much. You know, I personally, if I was doing my top five in each category, this wouldn't have happened, because I would have had Idris Elba up for Best Supporting Actor for Beasts of No Nation. But it is up to the studios to give those opportunities. It is up to the studios as to what they greenlight and who they cast and what directors they get and what writers they're giving a chance to. And so this was just a year where those projects, there didn't happen to be a whole lot of people of color who had that chance to really shine. Beasts of No Nation, I think it's more of a bias against Netflix. It went to theaters just to go to theaters so it could qualify for awards, but it was really a Netflix movie. And even if it was one of the top 10 movies of the year, and if anyone wants to go to Flickblade, I put it in my top 10 of the year. But I think that was an institutional bias against Netflix, why Beasts of No Nation didn't get any love. But it's really the studios. It's the studios going, okay, we have this movie called Gods of Egypt, but all of them but one are going to be white. I mean, are you kidding?
The one blame I might throw at the Academy, and I want to know your opinion. I don't remember if you saw this movie or not. I didn't see it. But from all I've heard from it, and I would like to see it, I wonder if this is a plausible theory here. Will Smith maybe should have gotten a nod for Concussion. From what I understand, he put forth a brilliant performance. That might be the case for a guy who had an argument in this situation.
I did not see Concussion. Concussion wasn't that well reviewed, and actually bombed at the box office.
Okay.
I would say that Will Smith has been nominated twice before, and both times he lost to other black guys.
Right.
I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the people who are upset when you have a second year in a row where there are no non-white actors in the acting categories. I totally get that. But then you kind of go to, okay, whose performances were ignored? Will Smith, having not seen the movie, I understand, but just looking at how it performed and how it was reviewed,
right?
That one I can kind of go, well, okay. When you look at the Best Picture nominations, you know, for me, Straight Outta Compton was a better movie than some of those movies that were nominated. There were other movies that weren't nominated that I thought were better than Straight Outta Compton that weren't nominated either.
And that's the movie I was going to ask you about too. And that's the movie I was going to ask you about too, because I believe it had a couple of nominations in script and script adaptation, I believe. And I was a little bit surprised that it did. And having not seen it myself, but I was a little more surprised that the film that was as critically acclaimed as it was did not get more nominations in the Academy as well.
Well, it had its problems. I mean, the thing with Straight Outta Compton, if I remember right, all four of the screenwriters were white.
So, oh, dear.
You got a little irony with that. Straight Outta Compton had some criticism because it glorified the NWA a little bit too much. The NWA, as provocative as they were against the police, they were also a really immature, misogynist group. And they skipped some of the more unsavory events. And the ones I think of most is when Dr. Dre beat the crap out of this black woman reporter and put her in the hospital. And you can kind of sense that in the movie where it gets up to that point. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm an NWA expert, but I do kind of remember their story. And I remember listening to their albums. There's a guy in my neighborhood who just loved him, and so anytime we drove with him, he'd play him. I can't say I was a rap fan back then, but you know, you remember stuff like that in the news, and to have that stuff just like completely skipped so they can make Dr. Dre a more sympathetic character, you kind of sense that. NWA, the main three characters are Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, and Eazy-E. And since Ice Cube and Dr. Dre are still alive, you can kind of feel their influence and in how their characters were portrayed. And since Eazy-E is dead, you can kind of make more of the NWA his fault. But he really was the star of the NWA, and therefore Eazy-E is really the most complete character in the movie. And Jason Mitchell is another one as Eazy-E, where I would not have minded at all if he had been nominated for Best Supporting Actor. So on one hand, I can kind of see why Straight Outta Compton didn't get more than it did, but on the other hand, I wouldn't have minded if it gotten more than it did.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. I guess with all of that out of the way, were you in agreement with the final, I guess, winners?
Overall, sure. Mad Max was the most fun I had at the movies, and I called it the number one movie of the year, so I'm glad it won the most awards. I'm glad Leo won for The Revenant. I was shocked that they gave Best Director to Alejandro Iñárritu for The Revenant. It's very rare that anyone will win Best Director 2 years in a row. In fact, it's only happened twice before. The other two were John Ford and Joseph Mankiewicz. So this
So
was the
he was
first
Revenant.
time
What was he
in
last year?
Birdman. So he's
Okay.
the first director in 65 years to win Best Director back to back, and he's a Mexican. You know, he's a man of color, and he was one where he was giving this great speech, and the music started up, and he just plowed through it, and the music finally stopped, and I was like, "Good for you! I want to hear what he's talking about." You know,
Well,
if someone's
yeah.
giving their thank you speech and they're just rattling off names, I don't care if the music starts up. But there was more than one person who started to give this really interesting speech, and then the music started up, and I was like, "Stop! Let them talk."
And that's the point I got to with what I was saying a minute ago. I thought it was brilliant, and I'm glad he continued, and I'm glad they stopped.
Yeah.
And movie of the year went to was it Spotlight?
Which is really good. I put that as number four on my top 10 list.
Okay.
It is really good. It's a lot like All the President's Men in that it's not flashy. It's very straightforward. This event leads to this event. This leads to this event.
And it hit pretty
But
close
yeah,
to some
it was
true
really
events,
good.
correct?
Well, yeah, it's all about the Boston Globe reporters who uncovered the global scandal of how the Catholic Church had all these pedophile priests and they were just moving them around from parish to parish.
Right. So, well, yeah, so there you have it, the Oscars. I did. I enjoyed watching them. I wasn't sure I was going to at first, and I honestly did enjoy them. And I can't help but put in a little Star Wars here. I enjoyed the Star Wars parts that they had. Daisy Ridley, a presenter, I thought she looked great and had great confidence about her. I enjoyed seeing the droids come out on the stage. I thought that was brilliant. And lost in all of this was a man who received his 50th nomination, more nominations than anyone has ever received, John Williams. Although he didn't win, 50 nominations at the Academy is pretty impressive for somebody.
50?
Yeah, 50th nomination he received.
That doesn't seem
Yeah,
possible. That's
I
like being
know.
nominated multiple times in some years,
Well,
which
I
he
know.
probably was now that I think about
Yeah, he really was because I mean,
it.
how look at how many soundtracks he's done, from Superman to Jaws to Harry Potter to, you know, he's done so many over the years, and not just Star Wars. So yeah, I mean, I retweeted
Yeah.
something. I think it was
Harry
EW that
Potter,
tweeted it
Jurassic
out.
Park, just everything Spielberg, you're right.
Yeah, and I tweeted out, I retweeted something on Sunday night from EW, I think it was, who actually pointed it out. 50 nominations, more than any living or non-living person has ever won, has ever received. So.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his, and it does look like it's, I don't know if this is 50, but Yeah, he's nominated 67, 69 twice, 71, 72 twice, 3 times in 73. Well, that's how it happens. If
Right?
you're nominated for score and song, which happened quite a few times as I scroll through. Yeah, I bet you that it is 50.
It's an
That's
impressive toll.
impressive.
The man is 83 years old, but it's or close to 83 or 84. I can't remember, but yeah, it's very impressive. So, any final thoughts? Anything else?
Final thoughts. Well, we're mainly a jazz podcast, so I will say my final thoughts is I think our new core four is Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, and Rodney Hood. I think once Dante Exum comes back next year, it'll be our Fab Five. But this season has become more about, okay, we're going to go ahead and continue the development. And if we make the playoffs, great, then we'll get killed by the Warriors. If we don't make the playoffs, okay, then we'll have another lottery pick. This season to me has, in the last 22 games, is going to be more about development and the off season than whatever the postseason holds.
And I am going to agree with you on all of that. And I'm going to throw one more player into that mix. You had Fab Five. I think we need not forget Alec Burks. We began the show with you saying that you miss him now more than ever. I have to agree with you. And I think he is a player that fits into the Jazz's top players discussion. He is one of six players that I think can impact the game for the Jazz in the future and is very important for the Jazz right now. So I'm glad and hope that we'll have him back very soon. And I look forward to next season when I hope that all of them are healthy and we get to see what this development brings. So, all right, folks. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Facebook, Jedi and Germs, on Twitter, Jedi and Germs, and on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. Please get at us, offer your thoughts on this show, and hopefully this show this week will make it onto all platforms. We're going to try and, your friendly neighborhood Jedi is going to attempt to try the producer hands tonight with the absence of Devin. We're going to see how this turns out. So, look for us all again next week, folks. Thanks for joining us. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.